This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, Scott Hansen here from NFL Red Zone. I hope you're checking out 1 hour of 5 Yard Rush, one of the best podcasts on NFL football in the UK.
Good evening, Rush Nation. It's another Thursday. It's another flagship show. Stocks isn't here, but it's okay. You don't have to listen to my whiny voice for the next hour alone. I do have a wonderful guest with me. And who else? Returning guest. I don't know how many times you've been on now, Joe. 4, 5 times. I don't know. You're basically like part of the furniture anyway. So owner and managing editor of Fantasy Pros, recently crowned FSGA Radio Show of the Year. You're fighting for SiriusXM, which is only in the US. You can't get it here, which is annoying. Fantasy Game Day Show and then Fantasy Feast.
Seriously, you can't get you can't get Sirius in the UK?
Nope. I've been speaking to the folks there for about 3 years saying, get it over here. It can't, like, I have to hooky the VPN to make it work. But hey, it's Joe Dolan, Newcastle United fan. I forgot to put that in the intro as well. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing very well, Murph. Just getting over, I think, a touch of COVID. I do want to say that wasn't recently. I mean, it depends on what you think of recently. We were the Matt Camp and I were the 2019 winners of the FSGA Radio Show of the Year. I don't even know if they do that award anymore. FSGA has switched to more of like a kind of a catch-all content, kind of like a business awards, you know, like catch-all content. And I think the FSWA does the like the Radio Show of the Year, which Paul Kelly and who's now my co-host, we are not nominated for. But I did get popped for an ongoing article series nomination this year at the FSWA, which I'm excited about. But this is not for me to pat myself on the back, Murph. This is your show. What's going on, man?
It's for me to pat you on the back. It's just so good to have you. It's been a while since we've spoken. The fortunes of Newcastle United are still, you know, storming high. McLaren are good in F1, which is your F1 team. So it's like,
I think I'm a team agnostic with F1 at this point. Yeah, well, you know, I thought McLaren did my boy Danny Ric a little dirty, although I think they probably upgraded in the long run. Christian Horner is still an absolute knob, Murph, if that but Danny Ric, I think, is angling to take Checo Perez's seat next year. I think that's what he wants to do. But it, an interesting grid, like, there's no driver replacements on the grid this year.
No, there is.
I mean, which is, how uncommon is that? I mean, I'll never say that I'm anything more than a Drive to Survive F1 guy. But like I'm seriously into it now. And I've actually gotten into kind of like other motorsport because of it. Just like my one buddy, I hazard to guess in the UK, you do not give a flying crap about American stock car auto racing, NASCAR.
No, so yeah, not as much. Yeah. I've been to NASCAR several times.
Oh, really? Oh, you lived in Florida for a while. That's kind of, I've never been to a NASCAR race, and like, I'm still much more of an F1 fan, but my buddy is an absolute lunatic when it comes to NASCAR. He's literally been watching every race from the 1989 Cup Series, and he's just like texting us, and I'm like, he's like, look at this rack. How did Davey get out of it? And I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, but we all have our things, but
it's a fun thing to go to. So I've been to
I'm sure it is.
I've been to two Daytona 500s. I've been to the Pepsi 600 at Daytona, which is the night race.
Yeah,
that is fun. Like, because that is just mad. And like, it's a good sport to go and view. Telly watching's a little hard.
Yeah, F1 is just a better television product, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is.
And I still don't understand the ins and outs of, like, you know, why is this good? Why is that bad? And all that stuff. I live in South Carolina right now. I am a stone's throw from, like, six NASCAR tracks. You know, Charlotte, Atlanta, Bristol, which is a short track, Darlington. But I've never been, and I wouldn't say I'm a fan, but like, you know, I've started to dabble a little bit. I think it's hysterical. They actually just put out, Netflix is Drive to Survivifying basically every sport in the world. Like they did a golf show, which is good, which was very good, especially now because they have all the live stuff. They did a tennis one, which is another highly individualized sport, you know. And now there's a NASCAR one that they just put out, you know, and there's, you know, what these sports, you need to have characters, right? And I think that's what they've done a good job of, like, in these individual sports. And, you know, like, one of the things, like, I never grew up liking auto racing or NASCAR or anything like that. And one of my things was always, how do you pick a favorite driver? Like, it's a car and they're, you know, like, you have to understand the personalities and all that stuff. So
yeah, you do. And the driver personality is so important, especially in motorsport, especially F1. Like, it's huge. I just don't like the robotic, like, cookie cutter personalities. I always like the maverage. Well, I love Max Verstappen. I get that people don't like him. I get that he's an obstinate human being. I totally understand that.
Sociopath.
Is he a sociopath? I don't think he is. I don't think he's that far off his own backside. I think it's just a case of, I just think he tells people what he thinks. I think that's the bottom line. I think at the end of the day, he says, it's like when they did the Vegas track and they raced in Vegas. And he's like, this is crap. It was crap. It was a crap spectacle. You had people racing at 2 a.m. It just didn't work.
It was an American race that I could not watch. like seriously, I couldn't watch it. Like, I was in bed. I'm not staying up to watch that, you know? I heard the race was actually halfway decent. Like,
it was okay, but
it almost didn't
happen because the manhole covers were.
Of course, yeah. You know, like, F1, they did a good job with Drive to Survive because, like, the drivers are very hard to relate to. Almost all of them are incredibly rich kids. Who, you know, basically have had smoke blown up their asses literally some of them have been karting since they could walk, you know? So
100%, yeah.
Like, so it's hard to find somebody who's like really likable in that, which is why I think like Daniel Ricciardo kind of it, like, I have to imagine Daniel Ricciardo is the most popular F1 driver in America only because, like, you know, he has a personality and, like,
yeah, probably,
you know, he's a little, he's kind of American, you know, he's brash and he's got a sense of humor and he's loud and all that stuff. And not to say that, that you Brits are not, but, you know, I think Danny Rick and I don't know if Danny Rick and Lewis Hamilton are WhatsApping each other constantly. You know,
I don't think Lewis Hamilton's WhatsApping anyone in F1, yeah, really, to be honest. Especially now he's going to Ferrari next year. He's definitely, he sort of had to backpedal a little bit on
some. I'm more of a Lewis guy than Max guy.
No.
My wife just adores Lewis. You know, she's an academic type, you know, and like Lewis is very much a, you know, he's a, I mean, for a lot, my wife, one of her students called her their woke overlord. Like, and like, you know, my wife is not woke, like, you know, like she's not, but like, you know, she teaches in the South, so you know, she's an academic, but but Lewis has a lot of charitable sensibilities, I would think, with but and he's also very handsome. I think that helps, you know, like he's a good
and he's a knight of the realm. He's Sir Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, so when are you getting knighted, Murph?
I don't know. Probably got lost in the mail or something. I don't know. I wait for the next king to arrive. Like after
might not be too long there. We'll leave it. So like, oh yeah, sorry. No, well, believe me, I'm over. I got nothing to do with that. I'm just a neutral observer. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because so when everything happened with the Queen, I had family over from Florida, so they came over, and then they were like, oh, so the Prime Minister's resigned and you're getting a new Prime Minister. That's a cool thing to witness. And then like 2 days later, the Queen died. They're like, oh my God, we were here for that. And then like each town in England had like their own like personal respects thing. So we took them to that and they witnessed so much of that, which they wouldn't have probably seen. So, yeah, it was like weird timing for them to be here and see all of like history happen. Because so many of us have never seen the changing of a monarch before. So that was a bizarre experience.
I mean, when did Elizabeth rise to the throne? Like the 50s?
Yeah, early 50s.
Yeah, wow. So, I mean, that's like my mom remembers the Kennedy assassination and she doesn't remember Elizabeth ascending to the throne. So like that's pretty wild.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. It's just crazy times. But one thing that I think people will remember for a long time from now is this Chiefs dynasty that is being built.
You had to get me off my tangent there.
Oh, no, we've got plenty of tangents to get on to, but we'll talk about the Chiefs because they do deserve some plaudits after bringing home Super Bowl 58 in what was an entertaining yet low-scoring Super Bowl. What were your sort of initial thoughts? Did it go the way that you kind of expected it to go?
I gotta be honest, in ways yes and in ways no. I actually thought, based on the way that Brock Purdy played in the first two rounds of the playoffs, I thought that the amount of pressure that Steve Spagnuolo got on him, which he did, was going to lead to turnovers. In this industry, we give out bets. I'm not a huge betting guy, and I'm going to tell you why. It's because I live in a state where betting is not legal. You know, obviously there's offshore stuff. And, you know, one of the things that a lot of people do in the industry, and I think you need to do in the industry, and especially our guy Tom Brawley, you know, who's our betting lead at Fantasy Points, is you don't want to give out a bet if you're not going to make that bet yourself. Mm-hmm. Don't tell somebody to put their money on something if you wouldn't or aren't going to put your money on the same thing. So Tom, like I gave out a prop bet of Brock Purdy throwing multiple interceptions. It was +450. And I said, look, I can't bet this because it's in an onshore sports book and I don't have access to that. But it was one that I liked because, you know, we at Fantasy Points Data, we had charted Purdy with 5 turnover worthy throws in the first two rounds of the playoffs, or at least his first two rounds of the playoffs, and just one interception. He led the league in the postseason in turnover worthy throw rate and had just one interception. And then they got the pressure on Purdy in the Super Bowl. You know, Chris Jones was unblockable. Mm-hmm. You know, they had Spagnuolo. I think Trent McDuffie had a couple of great corner blitzes. Yeah. And Purdy in general, I thought, took decent care of the football. Like, I actually thought, even though the numbers weren't there and the game-winning drive and all that stuff, that, you know, that some 49er fans are telling you that this guy's the next Joe Montana because of that.
Yeah, two game-winning drives in the game they didn't win. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, like, I actually think the irony is, I thought he played the best he played in the playoffs in the Super Bowl. I don't think he was great. I think he was solid. I don't think he was great by any stretch, but I don't think he played well at all in the first two rounds. I co-host with Ross Tucker, who also brings Greg Cosell on the podcast. And I think his assessment was the same. You know, like, he had a bad third quarter against the Chiefs, but was otherwise pretty good. And in the first two games, it was like he was bad for the first three quarters and then had a pretty good fourth quarter to kind of In that regard, I thought the game went the way I expected, except I didn't think Purdy put the ball in harm's way the way I thought he was going to. No. And I think that leads to a real, like, the Brock Purdy discourse is not going to. First and foremost, he's successful, okay? He made the Super Bowl as a seventh-round pick in his second year in the NFL, okay? Anybody who's the number one overall pick would dream of making the Super Bowl in their second year. Now, of course, if you're the number one overall pick, there's the assumption that the team around you was terrible when you were drafted. You know, ask Bryce Young about that. Ask Trevor Lawrence about that after their rookie seasons. But you can't argue that he's successful. But, like, I feel like the Super Bowl and the way that it went down is going to allow us to be, or hopefully allow us to be, non-hyperbolic about Brock Purdy.
Yeah.
Like, he was probably good enough for them to win the game, but within the context of how they played that game. You know, Steve Wilks, who just got fired, held Patrick Mahomes to 16 points in basically five full quarters of football and then gave up the touchdown basically at the end of the fifth quarter.
And let's not forget that the touchdown they scored in regulation was a special teams mistake. Well, it wasn't a mistake. It was bad. It was a
13-yard drive. Yeah.
Yeah. It was exactly one play, 13-yard drive. Like, you can't put that on the DC. So, you know, you have to look at it in isolation. I have my own thoughts about Steve Wicks, which I'll get onto in a minute. I think with Purdy, the thing I saw from this game is, I'm just not sure. And, like, this is crazy, but I'm just not sure that Kyle Shanahan is willing to gamble all the marbles. He talks a great game. He's great when there's no real pressure on the line. But we've seen it in multiple Super Bowls now with Kyle Shanahan, that it just doesn't seem to be able to get it done. The play calling goes very negative. It's very safe. But then at the same point, he's not giving his quarterback the best opportunities to win. George Kittle was the quietest he's been in months in the Super Bowl. That's one good play, and that's it. You know, you've got Deebo Samuel, who I get is banged up. You've got Brandon Ayuk, who was pretty quiet. You know, it was Juwan Jennings was really the only guy on offense. Yeah, he was phenomenal. But they've got such a deep supporting cast there. And they're just, you know, for me, the way I talked about this game beforehand was, I see a lot of this stuff going between the 20s and between the lines. So I saw this being a lot of stuff over the middle. You're not going to beat the Chiefs out wide. They've got the best pass coverage in the NFL. They're allowing the least points to wide receivers in the NFL. So, you know, you're not going to beat them too often with the deep ball. You're not going to beat them in coverage. So you need to just get gradual yardage, and then use Christian McCaffrey as a battering ram once you're in the red zone to get you over the line. There was very little George Kittle. It was like, okay, so plan A, we'll go to Christian McCaffrey. Plan B, we'll try and stick it to Juwan Jennings. And that was kind of it. And it was like, okay, but where's George Kittle? Where is bringing in additional blockers? Where's bringing in pass rush or passes, attackers underneath that you can just leverage to dump off? That's what the Chiefs did really well. They saw the blitz coming. They had Travis Kelce underneath. They had multiple players. Noah Gray was underneath for a big play. You know, that's how they, you know, they got going, was they saw the blitz, they saw the game changing, and they adapted. The 49ers just said, we got a game plan. we're going to stick to it, win or lose. And you just can't do that in this environment of the NFL. And they just didn't deal with Spagnuolo. He just, he outcoached them again, as he did 4 years ago, as Steve Spagnuolo continues to do. He's probably he's easily been the best coordinator in the NFL this season by a country mile, because the Chiefs have been poor. The Chiefs are poor for months, and he just kept getting them out of a hole.
And also, let's keep in mind, like, I was talking about this with Brian Drake. You know Drake. I was talking about him with this. He was at the Super Bowl, so we had a little chat on our podcast. And I was just talking about this as, like, how many fan bases actually like their defensive coordinator? You know, think about it. Like every team complains about their defensive coordinator. Oh, my God. Oh, yeah, he has the number one defense in the league. But when it's third and 10, they play soft. And it feels like everybody's got that same complaint. But Chiefs fans certainly don't have that complaint. You know, the thing about the Chiefs that stands out to me, obviously I grew up an Eagles fan, and I was Andy Reid. I was 13 for Andy Reid's first season as the Eagles head coach in 1999. And then Andy, of course, was the head coach for 14 years, including my time when I became a professional. And I worked in that building with the Philadelphia Eagles. Andy was the head coach then. And I got to witness, you know, a lot of Andy's, obviously we know what his upsides are, but his downsides as a coach, you know, game managing. And I look at the fact that there was that series in the fourth quarter where, like, they blew a timeout on a fourth and one and punted the ball anyway. And then, like, you're like, man, there was that series at the end of the game where I'm like, man, they really could use that extra timeout as they're trying to drive, you know, to get this game to overtime and or win the game and whatnot. And I sat down and I thought to myself, Andy Reid in Philadelphia obviously had an excellent quarterback. Nobody would say Donovan McNabb was not a great NFL quarterback. Nah. Or good NFL quarterback, depending on how you want to use the term.
He was then good enough to win Super Bowls. Yep. I wouldn't put him in an elite category, but you look at some of the quarterbacks that have won Super Bowls, you would definitely say he's for in the sure, category of sure. that. He was good enough to win one.
But I go back and I watch. Look at the game, the first game the Chiefs played against the 49ers in the Super Bowl. Obviously, the Buccaneers blew them out, so it didn't. You know, they had Mahomes and the Bucs smoked them anyway. The Bucs defense was amazing in that game. Then you have the Eagles game and then the second 49ers game. And I'm just thinking to myself, look at some of the coaching decisions that Andy Reid made or some of the – and I'm just, like, trying to mentally put myself in the fact that what if Donovan McNabb was their quarterback in those three games that they've won? How many of them do they win?
One, maybe.
Maybe. And, like, you know, they're – you can make an argument. First and foremost, they definitely don't win this one if Donovan McNabb's their quarterback.
100%.
They won this game because the defense was great and Mahomes was great on in the second half of the game. That's why they won that game. The Eagles one is difficult to me because the Eagles put up 35 points in that game, okay? The Eagles, and Eagle fans are apoplectic that 49ers fired Steve Wilks because the Eagles fans are like, man, we win by three scores if we get that defensive performance last year. But the Eagles one's interesting to me because the Eagles defense had absolutely no resistance whatsoever. Like, of the Mahomes' three Super Bowl MVPs, the one against the Eagles was, to me, by far the least impressive because the Eagles didn't rush him at all. You know, he made a couple of plays with his legs on that bum ankle, which is – but, like, of that, I'm like, man, they didn't pressure him. You know, guys were wide open. They didn't turn the ball over. Like, maybe McNabb is able to do the same thing. But then that first one against the 49ers – where they trailed by two scores in the fourth quarter. You know, Garoppolo outplayed Mahomes for three quarters and then completely flipped on its head. I'm not sure if you just pop Donovan McNabb on those Chiefs teams, and this is an argument that we'll never have an answer to.
No.
I'm not sure they win one of those games.
No.
And that just shows the greatness of Mahomes.
The only one I think they're competitive in is probably the Eagles one, but they score that many points. I definitely don't think they win this one. As you say, Mahomes put in the way that he changed and adjusted in the game was significant in them winning this game. And that was the key. You looked at, and the thing is, I agree with you on the Andy Reid play call. Here's a fun fact for you. So the Chiefs have played in four of the last five Super Bowls, winning three. They've been outscored in those four Super Bowls, 108 to 104. Wow. Like, okay, they got blown out in one pretty bad. And there's excuses, yeah. And there's a lot of things that will be talked about. And there was a disruption to the preparation with Andy Reid's coach getting arrested and all of that stuff, right? I get it. Or son getting arrested, etc.
Yeah.
I get it. But the bottom line is what people just seem to do is they seem to play into Patrick Mahomes' hands. In that fourth quarter, you've got Tony Romo on the coverage saying, don't rush him. He knows what he's doing. Don't rush him. He's going to dump the ball off. Don't rush him. And they just, you know, it was the same thing. So I'm all for the Steve Wilkes firing. Now, listen, don't get me wrong. The timing, very scapegoaty. Like, it's very much like, hey, it's not my fault. It's that guy's fault. But one, Steve Wilkes is not that great of a defensive coordinator. This guy's been fired every single year for the last like 5 or 6 years from a job. Like, there's a trend here. The 49ers got stuck. Ultimately, they got
the Panthers stuck. Probably should have kept him, quite frankly.
Well,
you know, they might have ended up in good hands with Dave Canales, but you know what I'm saying.
I mean, that's a different story. I think that's I think that's such a left field hiring. Like, I don't think Dave Canales is that great. I think he's all right. But I don't think he's that great.
I'm sure he interviews extremely well.
He must do. Well, it helps that your GM is a good buddy of yours that you've known for 9 years at Seattle. Hey, for that sure. Always is going to go a long way. I just think with Steve Wilkes is, you know, you got to remember, he got fired from being the coordinator, the head coach of the Cardinals. That was rough. I mean, they were terrible. Then he goes to the Browns. He gets fired. Then he goes to, I think he has a year off. So he didn't get fired after getting a year off. But then he went to college. I can't remember where he went. But the end of the year in college. Then he went to Carolina, got fired. Well, no, he got promoted, then fired. And then now he got this job and was fired. And I think the difference was the Chiefs, the 49ers have struggled because they had Robert Saleh for a long time. Then they had D'Amico Ryans. So you lose two of your defensive coordinators to their coaching job. And they've both been brilliant at their jobs. Like, Robert Saleh was an amazing DC. He's had some struggles in New York, but
because he doesn't run that franchise.
Exactly. And that's
Aaron Rodgers does.
I don't think you can put that on him. D'Amico Ryans surely showed he's an excellent coach with what he did this year with the Texans. Like, an unbelievable job. So you're sitting there and you think, okay, they obviously don't have anyone internal. They're struggling with who they're going to get. The Texans are pointing quite late as well, so they missed out on that cycle. I think Steve Wilkes was just a panic hire. I don't think it worked. I don't think at any point, like, that D is a collection of incredible talent, but I'm not sure that D has played brilliantly as a unit. And I definitely don't think you can hear comments after the game from Joey Bosa saying they didn't feel they were prepared for Patrick Mahomes. That tells me everything I need. That one statement tells me everything I need to know, that Steve Wilkes didn't have. And you could tell Steve Wilkes did not adapt his game plan. Steve Spagnuolo did. This was the difference. That was where that game was won and lost. Steve Spagnuolo knew exactly how to get to Brock Purdy, how to put that pressure on, how to keep consistent pressure on, how to shut that offense down. And that's what he did. He shut that offense down. I do, and Shanahan and co didn't react. And then on the other side of the ball, Patrick Mahomes did. He knew how to ad-lib. He knew how to make adjustments. He saw that blitz. He saw the blitz after blitz after. He saw it coming a mile off. You know, with the Chiefs, what we've learned this season is if you're going to beat them, you have to beat them early. You have to get up three scores and you have to just manage the game. Mm-hmm. And they never, and in that first half, they should have been up more than seven. They should have been up two scores minimum. And they didn't make it count. And if you leave the Chiefs around long enough this season, they will beat you. And that's what has happened to every team this season that they've beaten. They haven't been good, the Chiefs. This is the funny thing, is they haven't been great. They just are winners. They know how to get it done. If you leave them alive long enough, they will beat you. And that's where the Buccaneers was different. In that one Super Bowl, they literally put the throttle on, they scored early, then they scored again, and they just maintained pressure. And before you knew it, Mahomes is down 20 and he's got nowhere to go.
Yeah.
And that's how you beat them, because then he gets desperate. Then he has to make the outlandish throws. Then he has to try and win the game on his own because he feels he's got nothing to lose. And that in its own right makes it impossible for them to win. That's how you beat the Chiefs. But I don't know why there isn't this. I don't know why people are struggling to put that game plan together. I guess that's the thing that I'd scratch my head at. I think Dan Campbell and the Lions would have won that game. I genuinely believe that. If they'd overcome the 49ers, if they had not choked in the way that they choked, yeah, I actually think they could have won that Super Bowl.
And that's what makes it. That's what makes it hard for Lion fans, man, because even ascending to the Super Bowl would have been great for them. But yeah, I mean, it was a game. I think the first half was boring. It was not a great display of football. And, you know, you could always say it was a good defensive game, and it probably was. Like, I don't think it was, it wasn't Patriots Rams level of boring. It was
I quite like that game from a defensive, when you like the defensive side of the ball and you see amazing defensive play.
I thought this game was more that, though. I thought this was more like exciting, good defense. Bosa and Chris Jones and Trent McDuffie, like I thought this game stood out more in that regard. But also, it felt like both offenses at least had the threat of scoring. Like, in that Rams-Patriots game, it was like neither team was like, I didn't think either team had a threat to score, So that's why I thought this game was better. But it's just hard to get back, man. And, now you have the Purdy conversation, and now he's 1 year away from getting paid. You don't have that's the thing. It's like, the Eagles had Jalen Hurts as a second rounder, and obviously Purdy's a seventh rounder. You don't have that extra year to decide. Are we going to give him the fifth year option, or, it's hard to keep these like really, really awesome rosters together. And that's why Mahomes is so special, because I'm not sure. I know like if you pop any other quarterback on that roster, that team's not winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah. 100%.
Can't say the same about San Francisco. Even the most militant Brock Purdy supporter cannot say the same about San Francisco. Oh, if you put any other quarterback on that roster, like, I don't know. I feel like I could put 15 quarterbacks on that roster who would have at least done a reason. And that's not to knock on Purdy. It's just showing where the true difference in this game was the fact that one team had Patrick Mahomes and the other team didn't.
I get that. I think that's a little harsh on Purdy, only because I don't think Purdy was given the opportunity to succeed. I put this one on Shanahan more than I do on Purdy. Because I look at the
Sure.
Yeah.
No doubt. But like, he missed throws in the third quarter. I thought he handled himself generally well. But I'm just saying, like, I don't know. Like, let's take another let's take Dak Prescott, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, Dak Prescott probably has San Francisco in like the same position in that game, right? Doesn't he? If not better. Kirk Cousins, who we know long has been apple of Kyle Shanahan's eye. And again, this is not to knock Brock Purdy. It's just to highlight how exceptional Mahomes is. Because as much as I love Josh Allen, and I think if you take Josh Allen on his best day, which I think even Bills supporters would say comes a little too inconsistently, I think if you take Josh Allen on his best day, you can easily make the case he's the best player in football. Like, in the way that he can take over a game. But like, he's just not as inevitable as Patrick Mahomes is. And that's why I don't think any other quarterback in the league wins the Super Bowl. I don't think any other quarterback in the league gets to the Super Bowl with that roster.
Not on that roster. No, I agree with you. But then I also think that I caveat that and say that Steve Spagnuolo is the other reason. I think if you don't have both of those people, that team probably doesn't even make the playoffs. I think Spagnuolo literally coached the season of his life. I genuinely believe. Like, if you were to say to me, best Hall of Fame season from a coordinator, that might be it. I'm struggling to think of a season that was more perfect from a individual coordinator play. Because they should have lost so many games. They should have lost so many games. And yes, Mahomes does make winnable. He turns losing situations into winning. But the way, like that AFC Championship game, The way they nullified the Ravens, that might be one of the greatest.
Yeah, I talked about the Rams and the Patriots, you know, yeah. It felt like they were not a threat to score. How about the Ravens, like, in the second half of that game?
That was wild. I mean, that game was mad. I mean, like, you don't see many coaching plans executed that well. We talked about Todd Bowles in the Super Bowl with the Buccaneers. That's definitely one. I mean, you can't even talk about the Bucs when they won it the first time round because, yeah, they scored 4 touchdowns as a defensive unit, but they did also give up 24 points.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's just an interesting dynamic. But I think both of those guys, I think Steve Spagnuolo, yeah, I think you're right. I think it was interesting. Someone asked that, like, the question to Andy Reid, like, how special is this one? I think this one's special because he probably had the least amount to do with it in terms of the design for victory. Because the play call, as you say, was questionable. He got, you know,
it's more the game management than the play calling. Andy's a great play caller, you know, like, and even in recent years, like, he's actually committed to Isaiah Pacheco. Of course, the Eagle fan complaint and occasionally was valid when they was, oh my God, run the ball every now and again. I actually think he does that with Pacheco. Maybe even
he did it on Sunday. Like, they did run the ball. Pacheco looked good. It definitely adds a dimension to that offense, which is useful. And it's fascinating. I'm fascinated to see what the Chiefs do next year. I'm fascinated to see what they do in the offseason to try and work around some of these deals. But yeah, the 49ers is an interesting one. Like, the window is going to shut on them very, very soon because, yeah, you mentioned Purdy's got paid, but McCaffrey, he's not got long left with all the injuries. Yeah. And
I mean, I'm hoping he has time left, man. Like, because, like, you know, in this day and age, the whole running back. So, but which, by the way, I feel like that discourse kind of petered out a little bit this year. Maybe it was replaced with the how much does Brock Purdy matter discourse. but like, I watched that NFC Championship game between McCaffrey, you know, and Jahmyr Gibbs on the Detroit side, and I'm just like, man. Tell me to look at two players who matter, right? Players who are making plays that not any Joe Schmo off the street is going to make. And, you know, and you also look at the capital that was given up to acquire them. Gibbs was a first round pick. McCaffrey, of course, was a first round pick, but also was acquired for 4 draft picks, you know? Yeah. So these were players who these weren't guys like Arian Foster who were undrafted and became difference makers and were the impetus for the running backs don't matter. These are players who teams identified prior to acquiring them as a difference making player, and they turned out to be difference making players. So 100%. I'm starting to hope that, like, maybe this style of offense lends back into, because ultimately we're fantasy guys, right? And we're about to head into a season in 2020, and I know we want to talk wide receivers. Maybe we can use this as a pivot.
Yeah.
How many running backs right now? Try to put your thinking cap on for August. Understanding we've still got the draft and free agency. You know, Saquon Barkley's out there. Where's he going to sign? Well, how many running backs right now are you confident saying are first round picks for fantasy next year?
So we did this show with Pat Fitzmaurice last week. So at the moment, at this very moment in time, there are maybe 2.
McCaffrey.
Yeah. So I think you're looking at McCaffrey, and I think you're looking at possibly, well, so I don't think Bijan, but I think Bijan is going to get the hype to catapult
because
up there.
Of the new coaching. Breece Hall.
Breece Hall is going to be around there, but I think because of the Aaron Rodgers effect, I think he's going to hover in the second. I don't think he's going to get the one. I think that will sneak into the back end of the first is one you've mentioned, Jahmyr Gibbs.
Okay, Jahmyr Gibbs. So I'm looking at, you know, underdog ADP vis-a-vis our guy Graham Barfield's rankings.
Yeah,
he has Kyren Williams. I use this term on the Fantasy Feast podcast with Ross this week. Sean McVay is a running back geyser, like a womanizer. Like, you know, the man, like, he can pull some tail, but he runs through them, right? Like that's what he does with running backs. And
he commits to one and he goes for it. The problem that you have is he never falls in love with one.
He's exactly. That's exactly it. That's my concern with Kyren. And Kyren was freaking awesome this year. Like, I owe Kyren some money this year. You know, he was my guy, you know, picking him up off the waiver. Graham Barfield was awesome for me. Like, he started pounding like August 20th. Just like doing group chat. He's like, man, I really like Kyren Williams at cost. And I'm like, you know what? You're right, Graham. I'm just going to start drafting him. And, you know, he was a very popular player for me on my best ball teams that advanced. But again, is the history with Sean McVay. And McVay is a very interesting history, because if you're to tell me Sean McVay is committing to Kyren Williams as his RB1 this year, I'm taking him 2 overall.
Yeah, I'm taking him top 5. Easy.
Right. But like, is Kyren Williams, you know, going to be that guy? Are they gonna always end up drafting a guy?
They draft the guy in the second round.
Yeah. 100%. Here we go again, you know, like so. But again, I mean, I really believe this is gonna be a wide receiver heavy first round, and now there's not even the Kelce factor, right?
No.
Because Kelce's not going. I don't even think he's my tight end one next year.
No, I think it's going to be an interesting debate. I think you have to see where the Chiefs go in the draft and who they might acquire. That might change things. If they don't do too much to that offense, then you can make the case for him. But yeah, I think the way I envision this offseason outplaying is, I think best ball season, you're going to see very little running back activity in the first round. I think you're going to stick with 2. I think as the season goes through, people will get scared. People will go to that scarcity argument. There's only 5 or 6 game changers. Yep. We're going to go in. I'm going to go and draft Taylor in that offense now. I'm going to go. Saquon might land somewhere and people will fall in love all over again with Saquon. You know, we talked about Breece Hall and there'll be all this hype about the Jets and people will fall in love and take him high. Nick Chubb could get released from Cleveland and go somewhere. You know, these are all sorts of things. I think that scarcity argument of so few game changers will push 4, maybe 5 back into the first round in August. But I don't think you're going to see it straight away. I think it's literally going to be a long scathing, especially for the more casual players who would drive that ADP differently.
Bijan hype's coming. You know it's coming. 100%. I love the player. So I can't knock that too much. Like, you know, defensive minded head coach, let's run the rock, you know, but Tyler Algier's still a pretty good player. You know, what are they going to lean into there? Yeah. It's going to be fascinating, but, these receivers, I mean, it's going to be a pretty fascinating group of guys, right? I mean, Tyreek's getting close to 30. JJ's coming off a season where he had injuries, but he's great anyway. CeeDee Lamb was fantastic, but you know, Dak Prescott's another year older. Mike McCarthy, I don't know, man, but I just feel like it's harder to argue against the wide receivers than it is the running backs this year.
100%. So, like, I wrote some categories out based on last year, and I think you're right. I think from an overarching strategy. And Pat said the same thing last week. If you're going for a build, you're going to feel more confident in your wide receivers early because you know you can get a sprinkling of a good one late. There's so many good late options that you can lean into and pick up. What I will say is, this year, if you drafted a wide receiver in the first round, if his name wasn't Tyreek Hill, he let you down. Justin Jefferson, not his fault. Got injured. Jamar Chase missed a couple of games, but that didn't really pan out all that well either. You know, we got a few others that you just like.
There was the fringy first rounders, though, that worked out, right? The CeeDee Lamb, AJ Brown. AJ Brown obviously was better in the first half of the year because the Eagles were better in the first half of the year. Amon-Ra St. Brown. I mean, dude, I got to be honest. Do y'all say dude in
yeah, sort of.
Yeah, okay.
You're fine.
Yeah. Is it like, could you make the argument that like the highest floor player in all of fantasy football in 2024 is Amon Ross St. Brown.
Could
you just be like, at five, you know what? I'm not going to get cute with Ja'Marr Chase and, you know, Burrow coming off. I'm just going to take Amon Ra because he caught seven passes in every damn game. So
yeah,
I'll ride with that. And it's not like he doesn't have upside either, right? So 100%. I don't know. It feels like he's like
the safest first round pick. Easy.
Yeah.
We crown that like, now. That is not changing for the rest of the offseason.
I don't think he's got the like the old Antonio Brown, like the chance that not only you know he's going to catch six passes in every game, but there's the chance that one of those games he's going to go 9 for 220 and two touchdowns. I don't know if he's got that because I don't know if he's that explosive. But man, like as a guy in the middle of the first round, like if Amon Ra is my most drafted player in fantasy, I don't think I'm gonna be too upset about that. Not that you know. It just feels like he's a guy you can make an argument for at any stage of the first round.
Yeah, I like him at three. I like him at three. I like him at four. Anywhere onwards, I think for me, you're looking at maybe Christian McCaffrey, and we know Justin Jefferson's special. Outside of those two, I could make a case for him anywhere else easily because of that flaw, because of the fact you know it's going, the fact he's durable, you know, he barely missed any time. You know, he bounces back quickly. He's young. He's in an exciting offense that we know can support the play. Yeah, I'm in. Like, I'm in on Amon Ra St. Brown so much. I think, he absolutely crushed it last year. He absolutely can crush again. I mean, he finished as wide receiver three behind Lamb. And Lamb was a bit up and down. And Tyreek was great, but Tyreek as well had off games. You know, he had games that he would cost you. Amon Ra St. Brown, consistently model. Every week he shot the lights out for you. Like, and that's, there's a lot to be had in the first round. You know, you can go for a big play that could work out really nicely for you, but it could also backfire. And like, I just don't see any downside for him. And I think that's a big one. But I think that group of those who drafted highly that worked out, AJ Brown did work out. He had some good games down the stretch, but it was a bit rough for a while.
And, you know, I think the Eagle offense is more to blame for that. You know,
100%.
The Eagle offense was just like, we're going to do what we do. And it was good enough last year because we have so much talent. And like, I sometimes just don't understand why coaches are like, I don't know, man. Like the 49ers have a lot of talent and Shanahan's putting 14 guys in motion on every play. Like it doesn't have to be that complicated. Like I actually think AJ Brown and Devontae Smith should both be getting drafted highly again this year, because I think Kellen Moore is going to be an improvement for that offense for the Eagles. So yeah, AJ Brown was certainly a guy who had a quality season and it was, of course he got hurt at the end of it with freaking Philly playing their starters on that awful New York turf. And what a terrible end of the season for them, but they just got to flush it and move forward.
Yeah, they do. But at that same point, I think you're right. I think you've got to look at it. They've got new offensive coordinators in now. It's going to be different in Philly. And I think you can go back to trust them. I think those that performed well last year that were drafted highly will be there and thereabouts again. The two that I think are the most interesting that went high that didn't really shoot the lights out. They did okay, but not brilliantly. Ja'Marr Chase, he was going wide receiver two in drafts. He ended up as wide receiver 10. Devontae Adams was wide receiver 8 in drafts. He finished wide receiver 13. What do we think about these guys with Adams getting a bit older? There's talk he might go to the Jets, which I would hate.
I would hate it for Garrett Wilson, yeah.
Who goes to New York and is successful? Who?
That's actually a really good question.
When was the last time? When was the last time? Breece Hall is probably it.
Santonio Holmes? Does he count? Right. Plexico Burress? I mean...
There's just not many players.
Plexico was actually decent for both New York teams. Santonio Holmes with the Jets was like the quintessential fantasy wide receiver 3. Man, he did not play for the Jets for as long as I thought.
It was 2 years?
Yeah, it was 4 years, but
oh, wow.
He basically was hurt for the last two. He was a good player and then just he basically just fell off a cliff. Wow. Yeah, like, well, Devontae, like, Murph, I don't know if we can even answer this question, and this is why, like, some people love playing best ball right now. You're like, they feel like, hey, I can get an edge by fading Devontae Adams, or I can get an edge by drafting Devontae Adams because nobody knows what's going to happen with him. Yeah. Who's the Raiders quarterback going to be? You know, like, do you want to see Aiden O'Connell out there? Because I don't. Like, no. He was fine. Yay. I mean, okay. Like, hey, he got the ball to Devontae a couple of times. Like, I'll give him that. There was that like kind of league winning performance that Devontae put up. Was that week 17 or was that week 16? It was week 17 where he caught the 13 passes. He had 21 targets. And then after, of course, he eliminated people the week before by catching just one pass. But
it was week 17. Yeah, because he caught one pass for minus one. 16, for 4 yards.
But then he won you a championship if you survived.
I had him in week 17.
Devontae's an interesting one. Like, you know, the Raiders were like, then this becomes an NFL draft conversation, right? Because, like, we're going to get not all these guys are going to go in the first round, but we're going to get first round buzz, Murph, on 6 quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And we're already seeing our guy, Brett Whitefield. I don't know if you saw this. First and foremost, Brett has very well reasoned takes, but I think he just wanted to plant his flag on how high he is on JJ McCarthy from Michigan. And he actually put him at number 1 in his mock draft. He's the only guy in the industry who's done that. It'll be his point to tell you that number 1, it's not what he thinks will happen. It's what he would do. But he also will be the first to tell you he was as high on Anthony Richardson early in the process as anybody last year. And Anthony Richardson ends up being a top 5 pick, but where are these quarterbacks going to go? And is one of them going to fall to a team like the Raiders or the Vikings? You know, these teams that are drafting in the middle of the first round. Michael Penix even going to be an upgrade for one of these teams? You know,
well, I really like Michael Penix. So actually, mm-hmm. I think he is. I actually think Michael Penix is highly underrated. I just love players that come out of Washington, the way that they character, the way that they're built, the leadership aspects. The intangibles, the things you can't measure are the things those Washington players have in spades. I've seen it at the Buccaneers. They take a lot of Washington players. Vita Vea, for example, those guys just carry themselves and they always perform to their expectations and beyond that. So I actually think Michael Penix Jr., when you sit and watch the tape and then you add those intangibles that you can't measure, I actually have him in this class. I actually have him at 3. And I have JJ right there with him. Like, for me, I'm just not in on Jaden Daniels, but this isn't a draft podcast. I'm going to put an alternate theory to you about the Raiders.
Yeah.
Wouldn't the most Raiders thing of all time be that they will trade for Russell Wilson?
Oh my God. Why would they do that? Oh,
because it's the Raiders. It's exactly what this is like from the Raiders playbook. Let's get Mr. Unlimited. Let's do it. Let Russ cook.
Oh my God. No, that would be terrible. I'd rather they stick with O'Connell. But like, no, look, there's going to be some quarterbacks out there. You know, we just had some news come down the pike when we were recording, Murph, about the quarterback position. Seattle is keeping Geno Smith on their roster to get that $13 million guarantee that would be guaranteed, you know, for like injury and what have you, which essentially means they're not cutting him.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean, like, Adam Schefter was very careful to say in his follow-up tweet, it means they could trade Geno. Maybe Seattle's a Penix spot because they pick in the middle of the first round. And Ryan Grubb is their offensive coordinator now, and he was the offensive coordinator for Penix at Washington last year.
I love that. I think that'd be an unbelievable landing spot.
So maybe that ends up being they keep Geno around, you know, sit Penix, and maybe teams are going to be more receptive to sitting guys on the bench now for a year after what we've seen from Jordan Love. And, you know, obviously what happened with Patrick Mahomes, you know, people at this point tend to forget that he sat for a year. You know, maybe teams will be more receptive to draft a guy like a Penix and say, all right, we don't think he's 100% ready yet, but we'll let him marinate for a little bit and see what happens with him. So it's going to be really interesting with some of the veteran quarterbacks. Obviously, Kirk Cousins is a free agent. Ryan Tannehill and Ryan Tannehill is being tied to the Steelers, of course, because they hired Fardy Arty. as their offensive coordinator. Justin Fields, what's going to happen with Justin Fields? There's going to be so much quarterback movement. It seems like I say this every offseason, but this might actually be the most interesting quarterback offseason of all time.
You
got six guys who are in the talk to be first round picks. Obviously, you got Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix, Michael Penix, and J.J. McCarthy.
Bo Nix is not going to be a first-round pick. I'm not having it.
I thought Bo Nix was terrible at the Senior Bowl. Now, I will say this. I was only there Tuesday, Wednesday for Bo Nix's practice. Brett Whitefield, Scott Barrett, they told me he was much better on Thursday, so I can only speak to what I saw. I thought Penix threw the ball of those quarterbacks. I thought he threw it the best on Tuesday, but he did not throw it well on Wednesday. So, it was a really interesting dynamic at the Senior Bowl, but there's going to be six guys who you're going to see mocked, and maybe four of them go in the first round. But look, six guys who might end up a day one or two pick, maybe even another quarterback or two going on day two. You got Kirk Cousins, Ryan Tannehill, free agents. You know, you've got Justin Fields, who's ostensibly going to be on the trade market. Look at all this movement Russell Wilson, who knows what happens with him, you know. Geno, we just talked about Geno. There is a very real chance that the Seahawks could trade Geno. What's going to happen with the Steelers? Would I feel good about Kenny Pickett there? No, I thought he was terrible this past year.
They'll move on and get somebody 100%. It's going to be a situation, but I think he's going to resign.
I think Geno's earned the starting job. Yeah. Geno is good. Geno's one of the 32 best quarterbacks in the league.
Considering who we've had out there this season, you know, I still think New York is a really interesting, I think both the Jets and also the Giants are interesting.
Right. What are the Giants going to do at quarterback? You know, they were terrible this year. So there's so much that movement that could happen here with some of these teams that it's really hard to get a grasp right now.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting dynamic, and then that's going to permeate all the way through. I think people are expecting like 6-7 wide receivers to go in the first round. I'm just not so sure because of that quarterback fallout. I think when you take the tackles in, when you take in some of the defensive backs that are going to go, I think you're going to look at this and think there might only be three, maybe four wide receivers that go round one.
Yeah. You're going to have the obvious ones there's going to be Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers. And then of course, Roma Dunze, who's a little older prospect. Brett Whitefield is very interested in Nabers because he feels like Nabers got a lot of free releases in college and that makes him a tougher evaluation. But it seems like there's some who have him graded as high as Harrison. So we'll see what happens in that regard. But this is going to be a great NFL draft. The running back position for the draft is, I think it's got some guys though, late day two and day three who have some juice to them, depending on what landing spots they have. But Bucky
Irvin, let's go.
Yeah. We got, this kid, this white kid from New Hampshire was like lit up the Senior Bowl. Dylan Lobby. If he tests well, I think he's going to be interesting because they were actually running him with the receivers on day two of Senior Bowl practices, which I think is going to be absolutely fascinating to see what teams do with him. But then, you know, let's look at, given like you said, it's not a great class for running backs to be drafted. Look at some of the free agents at running back, Murph. Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs, Tony Pollard, Saquon Barkley, Austin Eckler, who had a terrible season, obviously.
I can't see much interest coming in.
Devin Singletary is a free agent. He had a nice year. DeAndre Swift had a 1,000-yard rushing season. He's a free agent. Antonio Gibson's a free agent. It's a really good running back class in free agency. So does a team try to like thread the needle with like a big money 1 or 2 year deal for a Saquon or a Josh Jacobs and draft a guy? It's going to be really interesting to see that position shake out.
I'm going to throw another name out there who isn't a free agent, but who I would expect to end up as a free agent. And that is Nick Chubb. Chubb has got 19 million against his name next year on the cap. They can cut him for 4 million. He's had two career season ending injuries. Maybe three.
Oh, he's
a season-ending injury. Yeah.
Thing though, man, he's a guy that they brought out to fire up the crowd when they're looking to make the playoffs. So that would be interesting because he's beloved there with the Browns fans.
He is, but he's 28. You know, he's been great, but he's not been absolutely elite. If you think about his numbers in playing, he's only played in his career. He has played a total of 77 games in 6 years.
Yeah, I mean, well, I would contest that he's elite when he's been on the field, but I guess your contention is that he hasn't always been on the field.
No, I mean, he has 4,000-yard rushing seasons, which is good. You know, one at 1,494, and then 2022 is at 1,525. But, you know, he has got good numbers and good production. Not amazing in the receiving game. Not terrible, but it's not incredible. You know, 1,000 yards career receiving over six seasons isn't all that much. I think for me, it's just a case of he is an excellent player, but 18, 19 million? That's a lot of money for what we've just seen in the Super Bowl. That position doesn't work. It's not worth paying. Unless you have that, even Christian McCaffrey, you paid all that money to.
He fumbled, yeah. That happens.
Of course happens. But at the end of the day, it still didn't make you the difference in the Super Bowl. It still didn't get you over the line. And it's very hard. We talk about paying quarterbacks, paying them that elite money, unless they are elite. And, you know, Patrick Mahomes has done that. And credit to him, because he did something that very few players can do, take a significant cap hit and get a team over the line. That's why he's special. That's why you pay him the money. Running backs is even less so. When was the last time a running back got $8 million a year and got a team over the line in the Super Bowl? I can't think of one.
Yeah. Well, it's also because the money is now down on those guys. So I understand. It's like, maybe the guys like Jahmyr Gibbs, if that kind of player keeps, you know, showing up, maybe that changes the equation at some point, you know?
Yeah, it might do. And I'm not definitely saying that Nick Chubb gets cut, but that is one I'm watching as a situation, because he's 28. He's got a year left on his deal. It's 19 million. They can cut him for four. You know, they did pretty well without him.
Yeah.
Jerome Ford did a good job. Kareem Hunt, I'm not saying Kareem Hunt's the answer, but I'm saying...
I will say this, though. They couldn't run the football. Like, that's why Joe Flacco was dropping back 50 times a game, man. Like, because they couldn't run it. And look, the offensive line was certainly part of that because they had so many injuries on that line. Yeah. But that was certainly part of it.
It was, but I still think when they were healthy earlier on in the season, Jerome Ford did a great job. But it'd be interesting to see what happens. I think that's one I would watch out for. Going back to the wide receivers, because this is a class... Well, this is at the moment, we're so deep at the position that there are so many players that you can pick up that will elevate above cost. So last season we had Mike Evans, wide receiver 29, who finished at wide receiver 4. Puka Nacua, who was drafted at wide receiver 51, if he was even drafted. He finished as the wide receiver 6. DJ Moore, wide receiver 22, finished as the wide receiver 7. With these guys, and the fact there's so many others we haven't talked about, Rashee Rice wasn't really drafted heavily high, and he produced a great season. Jaden Reed, Zay Flowers, these are young guys we talked about. Because the fact this landscape is so stacked, and because it's so scarce at running back, can you see a universe where a hero RB quarterback pairing in two of the first three rounds with a wide receiver is a good way to go, or because of the predictability of the position, you're better off taking two wide receivers or three wide receivers in the opening round?
Now, with the exception of Allen and Hurts, it wasn't a great hero. It wasn't a great early round quarterback year either. You know,
no.
Mahomes wasn't great for fantasy at all. And of course, you always have to say for fantasy because, you know, you don't want to get the gods to spite you down. You know, Burrow got hurt. Justin Herbert got hurt and wasn't great. You know, maybe it's it. Let me see what people are doing come this spring, you know, especially after the draft, because if people are going to talk themselves into, well, there's so many great wide receivers that I'm just going to bump up some running backs and blah, 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 and quarterbacks. And then what if I just lean into it and say, all right, fine. All right, I'll take Amon-Ra St. Brown, A.J. Brown, and Rashee Rice, and that's how I'm going to start my draft. Yay, thank you. Like, maybe I'll do that. Maybe I'll just lean into it even more. Like, if people are like, hey, there's going to be great wide receivers later, so I'm going to – I said, no, give me the really great ones that I know are great, and I'll take them to start my draft. That could be a viable strategy. Just lean all the way into it this year because of that, and that gives you more flexibility to go find a Kyren Williams on the waiver wire or Devin Singletary on the waiver wire. Look, I had a team this year. I won my championship, and Morph, I know we're running out of time here. So
no, we're good.
Unfortunately, I talked too long.
No, we're good. I always leave extra time for this.
I had a team this year. I won this league for the first time in 15 years. It's my longest running league. It's a 14-teamer. I had two keepers. My keepers were Tyreek Hill and Ja'Marr Chase. I did not draft my first running back until the ninth round. My first running back drafted was Zach Charbonnet, who I used maybe once all season. But I drafted Kyren Williams. I drafted Alvin Kamara and sat him on the bench. I drafted Jaylen Warren, and I drafted Devon Achane. So all of a sudden, I'm just sitting here, and I had the most ideal. Like, let me tell you something. When you hit on that strategy, you feel unstoppable.
Yeah.
And there's luck that goes into it, but hitting on that zero RB, I still think that's the way to go, man. And I had Lamar Jackson, so I had a great fantasy quarterback.
I'm with you on that. I think I never used to play like that. I used to load up on the running back class because of the fact it was so difficult to get a viable RB. But I did that in a few leagues where I went wide receiver heavy and quarterback heavy in super flex, and then went back and actually picked up running backs late. And actually this league, the Champion of Champions, where I got this belt right here, which I keep next to me as a reminder because it's nice and sweet and it's shiny and it keeps me distracted / focused all day. You know, I ended up with I did take ETN, but then I waited and then picked up Rashad White because he was a late round value. And then I pretty much everyone else I ran off the waiver wire, Brian Robinson, Gus Edwards.
Yeah. I mean, that's like you hit on that strategy. It's just the best, especially if wide receivers are going to dominate again. So I don't know. I still think that's going to be my strategy this year, but let's see what the running backs look like in the early going.
I think there's so much movement to happen, but I think, do you know what? The way I'm going to play leagues this year is I'm going to actually play all the different strategies, which you should try and do. But sure. I think I absolutely love the leaning into the wide receivers, picking up three studs to start your draft. I love stacking with, if you can get two RBs, if there's a fade, if you can get like on the 1-2 turn, imagine getting on the 1-2 turn, getting like Breece Hall and either Bijan or Jamar Gibbs or something like that to pair up as a start. Like, that could be fun.
That's what's going to be funny about this year for me with that team that I just said I you know, started my team with. I essentially started my team with Ja'Marr Chase, Tyreek Hill, and Deebo Samuel. That was the start for my team. But the irony is, because I drafted Kyren Williams and Devon Achane late, and you only get to keep your guys. This is the keeper rules in this league. You get to keep a guy for 2 years maximum. The first year you keep them, it's the round you drafted them in. The second year, it's a first round pick. So you can't, but so I'm going to throw back Tyreek and Ja'Marr Chase, and I'm just going to keep Kyren and Devon Achane because I drafted them in like the 15th round. So I'm going to essentially be zero RB. But I'm going to start my team with two guys who are going to be early round picks. So
yeah,
it's going to be interesting to see how that team turns out this year.
That's a nice way to go. I think that's a really I don't play too many keeper leagues. I think I only played one.
I wouldn't say they're out of vogue because Dynasty's so big. Because keeper questions are always the most interesting questions to me when people ask fantasy questions, because it gives you the opportunity to weigh weigh risk and whatnot. It's always, always interesting with that. I actually think round keeper questions are the hardest keeper questions. I actually think auction keeper questions are much easier for me because with an auction, you can almost always take the value, understanding you get the money back that you can then spend on the guy you threw back. So I actually think round keeper questions are because you have a finite resource in terms of the draft picks. I think that actually becomes more interesting.
Yeah, and I like the fact that you can only keep him 2 years, and in the second year, it's a one pick.
Yeah. So and there are times when you're like, you know what, I'm not even going to mess around with it. I have Tyreek Hill and the 13th pick in the draft. I'm going to keep Tyreek because I know he wasn't going to make that. You know, I have that decision this year, but I don't think I'm going to make that decision.
I think you've got to make that decision. I love it, especially if Mostert doesn't stick around.
Yeah, and of course, poor Raheem, you know, he's the RB3 in fantasy, and then his yearly injury comes in week 17. Like unbelievable.
As is always the way. I want to get a thought for you just before I let you go on Empire Leagues. You play in Empire League? Because I was reading an article by a few folks in the fantasy industry this year, and that looks like a really fun format. It's not a format I've ever played in.
I can't even tell you I've even heard of them.
Okay.
What? So give it to me.
An Empire League is effectively a dynasty league where you withhold half the money. So you say you pay yearly due. Half the money goes into paying out the winner for that year. The other half goes into an Empire pot. The dynasty league ends when the person goes back to back. And they take the Empire
pot. Oh, that's actually kind of badass.
Yeah.
That is so. Oh, okay. So it also it discourages tanking in a way, right? It
completely discourages tanking
because like if you tear it all down and then the guy wins set. Yeah. Oh no, I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Oh wow. Well, Scott Barrett would hate that because Scott tears his dynasty teams down from the beginning. Yeah. which works for him, by the way. I'm the opposite. I'm like, well, somebody's got to win in the first year.
100%.
Yeah.
I'm hyper aggressive. I like to go in, trade future picks. I don't care. I just want to win.
Yeah. That's a really interesting strategy. Yeah. Oh, I like that. I've never heard of that. Now I do play in dynasty leagues where you basically pay 3 years of dues just to keep you engaged, but like, no, not like that. Where there's an add-on. That's fantastic.
All right. You and I talk offline about this. I think we got to sort one out.
I think that's a great plan.
All right. I love it. Okay. All right. Anything else? So this wide receiver, are there any more thoughts? It's so hard, I guess, with the wide receivers because there are so many. I have one last question.
Yeah.
Stephon Diggs. What are you doing with Stephon Diggs in 2024?
I think I'm out of the Stephon Diggs business.
Completely out. You've gone.
There's another player who I'm out of the George Kittle business. I'm not in it anymore. Yeah. I wasn't in it this year, and I'm out of the George Kittle business. I think I'm out of the Stephon Diggs business right now. I'll let somebody else draft him.
Yeah. I think, you know, I was looking through and I was trying to find a good pivot point. Wide receiver 55, second half of the season.
I don't know.
So week 10.
I mean, he might end up getting better because they need to get a better number two. Gabe Davis is like the quintessential number three receiver. like the quintessential number three. Throw it down the field. And, you know, some weeks he's going to catch you 4 for 100. And some weeks, we literally saw this. Other weeks he's going to goose egg you. Like, I mean, that's kind of what he is at this point.
Yeah, Rashid Shaheed all over again. Just those two guys should just be in their own little track. They should have their own little like draft pocket, just the two of them.
No kidding.
And they have to go back to back. One takes one, so the next person's going to take the other. Now, I think that's a I think it's a tough one with Diggs because he was so bad. Because that offense got better through the season and he just didn't. Mm-hmm. That's the worrying sign. Like, I think when you look at Chase, you can make the argument things didn't go right. The offense wasn't really clicking towards the end of the season. Things were got a bit stale. A lot of injuries to that offensive line. Yeah, I can make a case to where I can get back into the Jamar Chase business at the right price. I can't do that with Diggs because that offense got better and it just didn't work. Yeah. Actually, I have another list of guys I want to read out because I don't think you're going to be in on too many of these guys based on their seasons this year, but I'm curious if there is anyone that jumps out that could be a value at a decent price. Jacoby Myers, Tyler Lockett, depending on where he lands, Courtland Sutton, Terry McLaurin, or Deontay Johnson?
I'll always be willing to draft Deontay, depending on where his ADP lands, because people hate him. And honestly, he had a pretty good season this year. And I think they're going to get better at quarterback. Of course, they have Fardy-Arty, but, you know, I actually think Arthur Smith's a decent play designer. I just think he outsmarts himself with personnel usage. So I think Deontay is a guy you could definitely convince me to be in on this year. McLaurin, is there a receiver in the NFL who is so clearly a great receiver who has, like, never been a fantasy difference maker like McLaurin?
I'd say Jerry Jeudy, but
I don't think Jerry Judy's great.
Oh,
Murph, I need you. I'm dead serious. I want you to do something for me. And you've probably seen it on my Twitter feed. I want you to print out Jerry Jeudy statistics and print out Nelson Aguilar statistics and tell me the difference. I'm dead serious. Serious.
I get that if we're looking at box scores, but I think Jerry Jeudy is a player who has been underutilized, underused, and badly coached. I look at what he did. I think he's one of the best route runners that is just absolutely played badly.
But I got to be honest with you, man. Like, but look at Terry McLaurin. I don't even think the biggest Jeudy fan in the world could say he's better than Terry McLaurin. But look at McLaurin. He's got 4 straight 1,000-yard seasons. But he's got 25 touchdowns in 5 NFL years, and the most were 7 when he was a rookie.
Wow.
So, like, the last few years, you know, 14 touchdowns in – he's missed one game over that span. So, in the last 4 years, he's played 66 games and has scored 14 touchdowns. Like, he's a 1,000-yard receiver who doesn't make a difference for fantasy. It's, like, the wildest – he's like mini Julio Jones. Oh, and by the way, this might surprise you, he's entering his age 29 season.
Well, I didn't realize he was that old.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is crazy.
Play him when he goes against the Eagles, though. I can tell you that much. He's an Eagles killer. Kills him.
Oh, you've just taken me right out on Terry McLaurin. Okay. Yeah, I was kind of on the fringe.
Well, they obviously have the new coaching staff in Washington, but we'll Cliff Kingsbury, yay. I mean,
sideways pass.
Oh, yeah. Cliff Kingsbury, and by the way, they hired Brian Johnson, the Eagles' former offensive coordinator, as their senior, like, offensive assistant. I mean, Terry McLaurin might not take a step downfield on a route all season long. It's going to be wild.
He's going to play like that. But in PPR, he might go for, like, 10 for 60 every week.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, like, but it's going to be on screen passes, I'll tell you. Yeah.
He's going to be, like, a really awful Cooper Kupp.
Oh, God. Oh, I hate wide receiver screens, man. And I hope people in Washington are prepared to watch them.
Because that's all you're going to see this year. Enjoy. Buckle up. Buckle up, Commanders fans. Oh, look, this has been a treat, an absolute delight. I've kept you far too long. Joe, tell everyone in Rush Nation where they can find you, interact with you, where they can find your content, your podcast with Drake, and everything else.
Well, Fantasy Points Podcast, just search it up on your favorite podcasting platform. You can find me at fantasypoints.com. You can hit me on Twitter at FG_Dolan. Come subscribe and get in our subscriber Discord. And it'll be a blast. It'll be fun to have people in there this year. A lot of good things happening with the data suite and the company. We had a really good year, and big things are planned for this season.
Yeah, going from strength to strength. Fantasy Points has the best data in the industry, bar none. Whenever I write articles, I cite Fantasy Points a lot, and I'm grateful for all the work that Joe and the amazing guys do over there. A lot of love for everyone over there. So do subscribe, do follow Joe. It's definitely the best data you'll find in fantasy football anywhere in the universe. And I'm not just saying that because Joe's here, but if you've read any of my articles over the last 18 months, it's always according to Fantasy Points data. It's a kind of a one trick pony now. I don't need to subscribe to anything else. So, Joe, as always, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on. Rush Nation, thank you so much for listening. Next week, we're going to talk quarterbacks and we'll catch up on any other sort of news that drops. This is the kind of no news time for the next 3 weeks. So, there's not going to be too much movement on coaches or players. Instead, it's going to be more just about prepping for the draft, which we'll start doing. But we're going to review those quarterbacks. And as Joe said, it's an exciting time looking ahead with that. So we'll tune into that one next week. But until then, Rush Nation, don't forget, as always, keep rushing.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.